Yum Nub. Eat out the Yum Nub. A Tomi Topi Chicken. Ganoopa Fingo.
Hello and welcome to Upcast, your Star Wars cartoon podcast. My name is Matt, and disobeying orders again over a kid? Bad play, Hunter.
And my name's Jamie, but you started when you murdered my father. I'll never forgive you.
Is that from Princess Bride?
No, that's Boba Fett, okay. To Mace Windu.
Yeah, I was doing the... My name is Inigo Montoya. You call my father, prepare to die.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I'm trying to get into murder my children headspace right now. So
yes, just cool it, calm down. All right. So should we tell everybody what we're doing today?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're still doing Bad Batch right now. So today we're reviewing Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 4, A Different Approach. I'm super jet lagged because I just got back from California, but we're doing a rare Tuesday night recording, and episode 5, at the time of this recording, episode 5 of Bad Batch will be released in a few hours, I think like 6 or 7 hours. So before we get into the review, just a regular old episode this week, did you do any Star Wars this week, Jamie?
Here's some money, go see a Star Wars.
No, I mean, I watched some... episodes of The Mandalorian, but I didn't do anything crazy out of the way, Star Wars. But why don't I yield my time to you so you can talk about your Star Wars time?
Yeah, so I'm jet lagged because I just flew back from California I live on the East Coast. So I actually landed this morning at 7 a.m. I took the red eye back. While I was in California, I was visiting my mother, who lives in Northern California. She and I went to Rancho Obi-Wan, which, if you're not aware, which I guess is not, this might not be super widely known, but Rancho Obi-Wan is a location sort of in Petaluma, California. It's literally a barn, like an old chicken barn that houses the largest Star Wars memorabilia collection in the world. The owner of the collection, his name is Steve Sansweet. He is in the Guinness Book of World Records. He used to work for Lucasfilm as a fan liaison. Prior to that, he was like a journalist. He worked for the Wall Street Journal and things forever. But he started collecting Star Wars stuff back in the 70s, and his collection just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then, like 20-ish years ago, they cataloged over 100,000 individual items, and he got the title World's Largest Star Wars Collection. It was illogical. You can buy a ticket and get a guided tour through this facility, but it's basically a building the length of a football field, because it used to be, like I said, a chicken ranch. So it's these super, super long buildings that housed tens of thousands of chickens in it at one time. It's been completely converted into sort of a gallery for this stuff. But it is probably the most illogical place I've ever been. There were every single toy you can imagine. Like every single Star Wars toy was there. Like Micro Machines all the way up to like Kenner to modern stuff. And then he had a whole collection of bootlegs. He showed us a Yoda that was made in the 1980s in the Soviet Union, labeled in Cyrillic. Obviously not a licensed product. It just kept going and going and going. So they claim that they have over 1 million items. And that what they display in Rancho Obi-Wan is only about 15% of their total items, and it's believable. Like, it's just, I took maybe 60 photos for the 3 hours I was there, and it is indescribable what was there. And it was not like in a museum where you can't touch anything. You're not allowed to pull anything you want off the shelf, but they pull things off the shelf and they're like, hey, do you want to play with this? You want to like hold it and like and they point out little features of it. And the first thing they pulled off the shelf was the practice lightsaber used by Mark Hamill in Empire Strikes Back. It wasn't the screen-used lightsaber. It was the one they used to train for the battle with Darth Vader. And they had the suit worn by David Prowse in Empire Strikes Back in the same area. All these little alcoves in this barn had sort of themes to them. And so it was like, this is the Lego section, and this is the Grogu section. They had like a whole shelf just had Grogu stuff on it. And here's the section that has like all the droid action figures and all of the Ewok action figures and so on and so on and so on. So it was sort of organized, but it was also just chaos too, because we're walking by all this stuff, and one of the docents said, if you see something, just raise your hand and we'll talk about it. If you want to ask questions about it. And there's one of these Black Series Ahsoka figures, like a 6-inch figure. And I was looking at the box. It was just a random box on a random shelf. And I realized that Dave Filoni had drawn Ahsoka on the side of the box, like one of his like marker, like Sharpie sketches, and signed his name. So I raised my hand and I said, is this Dave Filoni's artwork? And the docent said, yeah, Dave lives near here. He comes by all the time. And I was like, all right, okay. And when I say, like, it's hard to describe the experience, because that black figure Ahsoka, Black Series figure Ahsoka, was one of maybe 20 items on that particular shelf. And without looking closer, it wasn't the most interesting item, not even close. And I was like, because they're just toys squirreled away everywhere in this place. It's like, oh, he's got a Black Series Ahsoka. There was an autographed Boba Fett on that shelf too from Bullock. And that was what people were looking at, because it was very obviously autographed. This was autographed on the side, like lower side of the box. I don't know. The whole thing was crazy. He had two rocket firing Boba Fetts in a display case toward the end of the tour. And if people don't know, this is an unproduced Kenner action figure from the 70s, and there are only 10 known in the world. He has two of them on display, and one of them sold, not one of his, but one of the 10, sold at auction in London, I think 3 years ago, for $200,000. Huh. And so this one shelf, and that wasn't the only thing on that shelf either. It was in this glass case, so you couldn't touch it, but you could get within an inch of it. But this one shelf had a dozen other little things on it that were all worth something. And so I was in there with my mother, and I was just like this one shelf of stuff is probably $500,000. And it was one shelf of hundreds or thousands of shelves of stuff that just kept going. And at the end, it sort of spit you out into this bigger room that had like a couch. And it was sort of I don't know if you've ever been to like an art gallery where they're selling the art, and there's like cubicles set up that are like hard, stiff wire, like wire walls. So there's like frames hanging off of the wires, like the tubes of metal or the grid of metal walls.
No,
I'm describing it like shit, but basically you walk into this last room and it's a gallery. It's just got art. There's some art from Nelvana hanging up, and I got to talk to him about that, because I was like, oh yeah, we make this dumb podcast about Star Wars cartoons. We reviewed a bunch of Nelvana stuff, and I sort of collect Nelvana. He had a bunch of stuff from the holiday special short, like original art from the Nelvana people. So he was showing me some of that. And that room also had the full-size Clone Wars statues of Rex, Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka, which I am not allowed to buy, but to put more mannequins in my basement. But it was fun to see them. I got a bunch of photos of those. And then the very last room was an arcade. So they just had like 20-ish arcade cabinets of like the old Star Wars, like Empire Strikes Back game from the mid-80s, to the pod racer where you sat in the pod racer and it like tipped back and forth, to like half a dozen pinball machines from different eras. I played the episode one pinball machine for a little bit, but it was all just set up to free play. Mm-hmm. Had a couple Star Wars slot machines and a bunch of like little metal slugs shaped like quarters you could drop in there and play. Just a big basket of them. But it was illogical. Yeah. Like I said, within like 15 minutes of being in there, they handed me a lightsaber prop used by Mark Hamill. And they're like, you can play with it. You can take a photo with it. You can't break it. I was like, okay. And then they have one of the bronze Yoda statues in there. So Lucasfilm commissioned a bronze Yoda to put in a fountain at Lucasfilm. It's a relatively famous photo. You see just about everybody who goes to Lucasfilm poses with this Yoda. But it turned out so well that they made four instead of just one. And he has one. He has one of the four. And it's toward the end of the tour. And since it's cast bronze, he's like, it weighs like 400 pounds. You can't break it. So go ahead and hug it or put your arm around it. Take a photo with it. Take a selfie with it. It was like that the whole time. There were props from, he had the cloak that the mannequin of Qui-Gon Jinn was burned in. So he had a burned Jedi robe. He had props from every movie, including the Ewok made for TV movies. It was just crazy. You could spend a year in there and not see everything.
Yeah, I wonder, at a certain point, anytime something new comes out, like Hasbro or something, do they just send it directly to them?
I don't think so. I think part of his collection came from his time when he worked as the fan liaison at Lucasfilm. He told multiple stories where he's like, they threw something out and I went in the garbage and got it. Right, especially during the prequel era, he got a bunch of stuff out of the trash that they, like props and things that they were throwing away that they didn't want anymore. Because they just weren't the kind of quality of a prop that they wanted to save in their own archive.
Mm-hmm.
But he also had things that he won't tell people how he got them, that Lucasfilm didn't know that he had taken or didn't know that he had. Like, he had the cod piece from for LOM, the C-3PO looking bounty hunter in Empire. like the piece, like the underwear piece.
Mm-hmm.
And we were looking at it because it's in a glass case again, just sitting there with an action figure of Forlom next to it to show like who it came from. And it's labeled as like a screen used prop. And apparently one of the docents said, nobody knows how that got here. Steve won't tell us how it got here. And we didn't know it was authentic until the archivist from Lucasfilm was walking through one day and pointed at it and said, that's where that ended up, because they have the entire costume except for that piece in the archive at Lucasfilm.
I'd like to think that he smuggled it out by wearing it out under his pants.
Yeah, I think that was, I know it was like a tongue-in-cheek thing to say at the time, but I think that's what they were implying, that it went out, on his body. But it was, like I said, I wasn't sure. I went in there, I was like, this is either going to be stupid or crazy. After about 10 minutes in there, I'm like, this is crazy. And we were only in the library. Like, it starts out in the library where it just has books and things. And just like the script collection. A shelf with just scripts on it. And everyone's just sort of like, there's maybe 12 of us on this tour. And everyone's just sort of like feeling out what the tour is going to be like. And I pointed out one of the boxes and I'm like, what's in all these boxes? And they're like, oh, those are copies of scripts. And they pulled down just a random box and opened it up. And it was the handwritten notes for Return of the Jedi. And I was like, that's one of the boxes on the shelf? Because there's 30 of them. What's in the rest of them? It's like legal pad paper. Mm-hmm. Whether it wasn't Lucas's writing, but it was probably someone like who was taking dictation or something. And it, like that's like there's hundreds, if not thousands, of boxes like that throughout this place where you just like look and be like, oh, here's like something signed by Dave Filoni. Oh, here's a screen used Darth Vader helmet from Empire Strikes Back. Oh, here's a piece of like here's part of Kylo Ren's costume from Episode 7. Right, here's some stuff from Rogue One. And he was like a omni collector. He anything and everything he could get, he would put in the museum. And someone asked him like, how often do you get stuff? And his like manager, he's like, every so often. And his manager's like, oh, we get a package almost every day. Because people send him stuff, but also he orders stuff. And so he's monetized this, and this is the hill he's going to die on, having this absurd collection. He did say that they're in talks with four other collectors, maybe it was four including him, to find a museum space where they can put it all on display and actually make a run at having like a Star Wars memorabilia museum. But it was an illogical amount of stuff.
Yeah, when you the pictures you sent me, all I could think of was the House on the Rock in Wisconsin. If anybody's ever been there, it's just a weird collection of stuff that's just like it's. I described it and it's kind of how I described the pictures that you sent me as like in a movie, like some sort of like post-apocalyptic movie. Some sort of place where like our heroes end up where you're not really sure if they're just in the afterlife or just some really weird place that it just seems like if somebody made a drug, what would it be like to do a drug trip but don't do drugs?
Yeah, it was about that level of like confusion in your brain. It's like you could spend like they had this little alcove where you could walk through and look at like maybe 100 Lego sets that they had collected, because they were just now getting into like filling in the Lego collection and making displays for them. And so they had a big new section of Legos and they wanted to show everybody. I like Legos. I do. And I have, my kids have a ton of Star Wars Legos. We play Legos all the time, but I was like, I don't know, like I'm not going to get excited about a Lego thing. And so I sort of milled about and I just found like a pallet of Don Post masks from like 1980, just sitting behind something else. And I was talking with one of the docents and I was like, what's this? He's like, oh yeah, we have all of the Don Post masks ever produced here. And Don Post was like one of the guys that went on to make masks for the prequels. And so there were just busts of his masks everywhere. And they had pallets of unopened boxes of the stuff from the 80s. I'm just like, how the hell do you find these things? And one of the docents said that a couple of big collectors, when they were getting old or trying to get out of collecting, sold their collections or partially sold, partially donated their collections to Rancho Obi-Wan. But it is one of these things where you could spend, yeah. Imagine like one of those utility shelves in a garage. It's mm-hmm. like 7 feet tall and like 6 feet wide. Now imagine every single one of those shelves has 100 items on it that you've never seen before, or you might have seen a third of them before. And now imagine that there are 200 of those shelves, each packed that densely, just in a row. And we were there for like 3 hours. You know, you couldn't see 1% of it. And we went back, somebody in the group said, can I go back and look at those Micro Machine kits, because we didn't get to spend any time with them. And one of the docents is like, sure. And they just walked back into like the beginning. And I was like, well, can I go back? Because I want to look at those droids, action figures that were right next to the Micro Machine stuff. And they're like, sure, come back and look. And I went back and I realized that there was a whole section of board games that I had missed. Like every single version of Star Wars Monopoly and Star Wars Clue and Risk and all these other things that I totally missed the first time I went through there. And it's not a small collection of board games. There might have been 200 of them. all piled on a shelf. I was like, did I not turn my head in this direction? Like, what's going on? Like I missed a whole section of things just, like, piled up there. It was very logical, but very cool. I would recommend it if anybody finds their way to Northern California. But here's a tip. They only sell 12 tickets a day, and they're only open 3 days a week. So you have to make sure you can get a ticket before. Like, don't be shocked if they sell out. Because they sell out of tickets about a month ahead of time. I had a very hard time getting a ticket. We had to go wait for a cancellation, basically.
There's an arcade out here. It's not like a Dave and Buster's. It's like a very old school arcade. They've got like, it's got a lot of like 80s arcade games. I mean, it's got like one of like the sit down original Star Wars games.
Nice.
It's very, I mean, it's not a great game by any stretch, but I mean, it's still cool. And they've got like one of the pod racing games, but it's just like all this 80s nostalgia, like 70s, 80s nostalgia, like with like toys that I remember having as a kid, getting it at like a garage sale, like some like Japanese toys for some cartoon I've never even seen, but I remember playing with the toy because my mom found it at a garage sale, and like Battlestar Galactica stuff like that, and just like being in there was just like overload for me, and then it's just like I don't even know where to start, because I'm just like I was about ready to just like drop to the floor and just start foaming at the mouth, and this place is only open like a few days a week, but yeah, I don't know if I could handle that. That'd be like too Rancho Obi-Wan. It seems like it would just be too much, and that would just be, they'd have to call an ambulance, because I would just like I would just pass out.
I mean, it became overwhelming. It really did. And by the time we got to, like they have this room where they call it, like the treasures room or something, where the Rocket Mario and Boba Fett was, they had a beautiful model of the ghost in there that I'd never seen before. It was just gorgeous. They didn't even mention it. They had large sections of the original Death Star just hanging on the wall, like screen-used sections of the original ILM model that they blew up and burned and everything, and did the drive-by camera shots. They had a piece of an airplane door that was used as a set dressing in The Phantom Menace. They had the Rakapari and Boba Fett's. They had that bronze Yoda statue in that room. Like, that room alone, there must have been millions of dollars of stuff just in that room from just like a auction value level. It was illogical. And so you could have spent 2 hours in that room just looking at that stuff. But it was one of a dozen rooms, and they had like a patter, and they were like keeping people moving. They weren't rushing you through by any means, but they wanted to get you to the end where the arcade was, and they had like a little presentation, and Steve Sansweet came out and talked and answered questions, and yeah, it was like my brain just became overwhelmed. It was like, oh, more and more and more. Like, at the last room, I just looked up after we'd been in there for like 20 minutes and realized that the entire room was lined with a shelf that had hundreds of different helmets of like stormtroopers and Imperial guards and stuff like that. Just the whole room, like a gigantic room, just had a shelf that there might have been 400 or 500 helmets up on the wall. Just helmets. It was illogical. And every single room was like that. You're like, oh, I totally missed that the first time I was walking through here because I was looking at this other crazy thing. But if they made a museum out of it, it would take days to go through. Easily. I don't know. It was wild.
Yeah, maybe they should have like passes, like, and partner with a hotel.
Except I don't think they really want people going through the collection very closely. And it's not really, it's partial, I'll put it this way, it's partially organized for display. A lot of it was just like random stuff on shelves. There was definitely like a bootleg section, like I said, like a Micro Machines section. There was a full-sized animatronic, and by animatronic I mean it moved, Biff Band, like Vigor and Dan and the Modal Nodes.
Mm-hmm.
And they turned it on and it played the Cantina theme, and they all sort of like scooted back and forth and like waved their instruments around. And like, and they got that from like an FAO Schwartz someplace that was closing when FAO Schwartz was going out of business. They brought it there and then they repaired it until it worked again. It's wild. There's no other way to put it. It's just a wild, crazy place. And if you get a chance to go, you have to go.
Okay. Yeah. I'll put it on my bucket list.
That's what it felt like. It felt like something, like, I know it's just a pile of Star Wars merchandise and props and things, but I walked out of there and I was like, I'm never going to top that. It's just not possible to do anything like that's that ridiculous again.
Yeah. When the aliens invade or zombie apocalypse and happens, that will be my trek. I will take the family and we're gonna ride it out.
There you go. Well, I can talk about that place forever. I was explaining it to my kids earlier tonight, and even they were getting glassy-eyed after like 30 minutes of hearing me talk about Rancho Obi-Wan, and they're Star Wars fans. So maybe we should move on to the show unless there's something else you want to talk about.
No, that's it.
Did you hear that? It was really quiet to me.
I heard it.
Okay. All right. Like we said earlier, today we're doing Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 4, A Different Approach. Jamie's going to do the plot summary in a minute, but I thought I could hit some cast and crew. We didn't really do cast and crew for the first few episodes because we're just trying to get through. So today I want to talk about Harry Lloyd. This is his first appearance in Star Wars, and he plays Captain Mann. And we're going to get to him in a minute. He's basically one of the villains. He's a British actor who's had some VO roles in things like American Dad. He plays the butcher. He plays a butcher in an episode called Widow's Peak. I like to throw in American Dad when I see it. It's for you.
Yeah.
Do you know that episode?
I'm trying to think about it.
He was also. But, what's that?
And I say, yeah, he's used to working with Dee Bradley Baker. Then
there you go. He was also in the English language version of Final Fantasy 16 as a couple voices, but he's had a lot of roles in British television. He played Charles Xavier in Legion, Bernard Max in Brave New World, Victor in Arcane, a friend to Stephen Hawking named Brian in the movie A Theory of Everything. He is a British actor. But he might be best known to American audiences as Viserys. How do you say that name?
Targaryen.
Targaryen from Game of Thrones. He appeared in 6 episodes of that series. He was also in a British series, a British Robin Hood series that was quite popular in Britain.
Yeah, he that character was pretty awful and meets a pretty awful death.
Yeah, I haven't watched Game of Thrones yet, but I read the plot summary for that character because I want to make sure that it was a character people would recognize, and it seemed like it would be.
Yeah.
Major plot points center around that character, even though he only lasts for 6 episodes. So we're going to get to Captain Mann in a little bit, but any questions about Harry here?
No.
All right, so the second person I want to talk about today is a woman named Meg Marchand. And she plays the street urchin and the ticketing agent in today's episode. But she's not really an actor. She's a production assistant or production coordinator on all the episodes of Season 1 of Bad Batch and a bunch of Clone Wars episodes. I'm not sure what a production coordinator does because I'm not in the business, but it sounds like she helps make the show run smoothly.
Yeah, it's obviously something to do with coordinating the production.
Yeah, I think that's probably a safe bet.
Yes.
She did have a previous speaking role in Star Wars. She played the voice of the computer in the Jedi Archives in the Tale of the Jedi's episode, The Sith Lord, where Dooku kills Yaddle. So, that's something. Like I said, she previously worked on as the production assistant for 12 episodes of Clone Wars in Season 7. She was also a set designer and production assistant on 45 episodes of Bones. She's worked on Fast and the Furious 7, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Gone Girl, Hunger Games, Pretty Little Liars, Lie to Me, Modern Family, and a dozen other things. But she is definitely a behind-the-camera sort of person that is making these productions run smoothly. But she's gotten a couple little speaking parts in some Star Wars.
So, wait a second. She was in Furious 7?
Yes.
Family.
Oops. Okay.
I can go with that.
There you go. And also, I'll just note for us, or for me, I guess, her Wikipedia page is wrong and needs to be updated. Speaking of wrong Wikipedia pages, the last person I'm going to talk about today, and I promise I won't do three for every episode, is the writer of today's episode, Ezra Nachman. This is his second Star Wars credit, according to Wikipedia, which is, well, Wikipedia has one credit, because they do not credit him with writing this episode, so I'll fix that as well. Wikipedia says he wrote the episode Clone Conspiracy in Season 2 of Bad Batch, which we both love that episode.
Yeah.
But his other main, he doesn't have a lot of credits, but he wrote the series Manifest, which was a Netflix series about a commercial airline that goes missing, and then 5 years later it reappears, and all of these people have to sort of pick up their lives where they left off. This is a familiar plot, at least to me. I've seen multiple sort of science fiction premises like this, including the Thanos snap, where all those people come back and have to put their lives back together.
Yeah.
So any questions about Meg or Ezra or Harry?
Nope. Let's get to the episode.
All right. You're doing the summary, so take it away. Yeah.
All right. I apologize. I am like on my last day of quarantine from having COVID, so my voice might get a little rough because I'm just not used to talking for long stretches of time.
If you're sick, you should go home.
Go home? Come on, guys. It's a flu. A little flu never hurt anybody.
The flu has killed millions.
Patently untrue.
Yeah, you should go home.
I hear your concern. Appreciate it. Guys, here's the deal. Oh, God. I'm not one of these little babies that has to call in sick from home. I'm a...
All right, so the show opens up with an Imperial shuttle in hyperspace. Omega and Tech are in trouble. The ship has sustained heavy damage, and Omega reports that the comms aren't working. Crosshair tells her to get the stabilizers online, but she says that they're definitely not responding. They drop out of hyperspace in front of a planet. Crosshair says that they have to land, and Omega says that the controls are not responding. They're coming in hard. And they crash in a snowy field near a mountain ridge. Omega, Crosshair, and Batcher are fine. They all survived the crash. They're all fine. Omega says it'll take too long to fix, which I always find funny that they, like, maybe it's just a Star Wars thing, but like, oh, we just crashed, but we could fix it. It's like, there's major structural damage.
Yeah.
That thing's not flying ever again.
Yeah, this crash is rough. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And Omega's laser focused on the goal of finding Hunter and Wrecker. The only secondary goal she has is making sure that Crosshair and Batcher are with her. Even that sort of falls down later in the episode, but she's like irrationally, like, she can't imagine leaving the ship because it's their mode of conveyance. But I think we have a good conversation between, lots of good conversation between Crosshair and Omega, and Omega having to do some growing up in this episode.
Yeah. She needs to get the navigational data to go back to Tantus to rescue the other prisoners, which I was actually pleasantly surprised to hear that, because like when they escaped, it's like, well, that's great, but then there's all those other clones that are screwed. So it's nice to know that she's thinking about them all. Crosshair tells her that they're not going back. They have to abandon the shuttle and work their way to a spaceport a few clicks away. The Empire will definitely be hunting them. The planet that they're on is called Law, and this is its first... Sorry, Law? Law?
They call it Lao.
Lao. Yeah. Man, I don't know what's... I don't know what's with me. So, on Tantus, Hemlock is interrogating Nalase, and Nalase is definitely playing dumb. It's more of like he knows that she knows that he knows, she knows that he knows, but they're still just...
It's an entertaining conversation because Nalase is definitely like I have no idea what happened. Yeah. Hemlock's like, fuck you. And she's like, why are you so mad at me? What did I do?
Yeah.
And she's like winking at him and like high-fiving herself.
Yeah. Hemlock asks why all the samples from Omega were previously negative, but the one Emery took was positive. And I'll say that it must be a false positive, and that can happen. Hemlock threatens her and leaves her in the cell. So at the spaceport on Lao, some stormtroopers are milling about a lot of the residences, shops, and so on. Crosshair says that these troopers aren't looking for them, that these are standard patrols. And Crosshair doesn't want to send a message since it'll give away their location. I wanted to mention before we go further, some of the stormtroopers, or say like these proto-stormtroopers, they're wearing not like robes, but it seems like extra like gear, like padding or something.
Yeah, the costumes are definitely different for these troopers, and I didn't dig into it at all, but I sort of assumed that this planet seems pretty cold, so maybe it was some sort of, like, winterized gear. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll buy that. Omega goes through the market and steals them some disguises. Now that they're dressed in winter gear, Crosshair's face is mostly covered. Batcher is still with him. Crosshair suggests that they sneak onto a departing shuttle and figure out their next move after that. So they head to the spaceport. And they find that the port is very well guarded. Crosshair suggests that they just shoot their way through the troopers and get on a shuttle. Omega doesn't like this and says that they should try something else first. Omega goes to a ticket taker and asks for two tickets. She's asked for their chain codes. Omega says that they don't have their chain codes, and Omega offers a bribe, but it will cost 15,000 credits per ticket, a total of 30K for Crosshair, Omega, and the dog. So Omega goes back to report to Crosshair that they now have to find a lot of money. Crosshair says killing stormtroopers would be faster than raising 30,000 credits. Omega sees some people gambling in a bar. She tells Crosshair she has an idea.
Richard, I'm going to need your watch. I've got a plan. Yikes.
They go into the bar and sit in the corner. Crosshair asks if she's going to hustle someone. She will bet with imaginary money and hope she wins. Crosshair does not like this plan at all.
This is a wild plan.
Yeah.
This is a plan that only works in a kid's movie. She's basically going to hustle poker in this bar. We're going to get there in a second, but this Tran Deshan is like playing. Nobody would do that. Like, no one would tolerate this from a child. Not in the least. You can't walk into a high-stakes poker game as, like, a 10-year-old girl or 13-year-old girl or boy and be taken seriously.
Yeah. I mean, you have to start at, like, the lower levels and work your way up, and you'd have to show money.
Yeah, you have to ante to play poker, right? But they don't do that here. We're going to get into it a little bit later, but this game is called Balans, and it is the first appearance of this card game in Star Wars.
Yeah. I'm guessing they're going with, like, Air Bud rules, that there's no actual rule saying kids can't play. So that's why she gets to play.
I would have enjoyed it much, much, much more if it was Batcher who was playing cards.
Air Batcher. All right. So there's a Tranishin playing cards and asks who's next. Omega steps up to the table, flashed her the near future, and Omega is way up, and then Transition is doubling down on the bets with her. An Imperial captain comes to the bar and goes up to the bar to talk to the droid serving. He receives a bride from the droid. We find out his name is Captain Man. During this transaction, the Transition loses again and insists on a rematch, but Omega wants to go. The captain comes over and takes his place of the Transition and insists she play him in the game. I was wondering if there's going to be something kind of like this happening, because like I've only played poker a handful of times, and anytime that I've tried to like okay, I'm as head as I'm going to get, I'm out of here, like the people would let me leave. Like, oh, you got to give us a chance to earn our money back, and then like ugh.
What do you think about Man as he shows up as like a character design?
I liked it because he's not fit, let's just say that. He's
disgusting.
He's just living off of like bribes and whatever. He's just taking whatever he wants.
As a corrupt government official, they play him perfectly, right? He's not quite, what was that guy's in the mine's name, Mako?
Yeah,
he was like,
I think Mako, yeah,
eating with both hands, like shoving food down his throat while everyone else is starving, sort of evil. But he's definitely like just collecting money from everybody just because he can, because he has no oversight, no actual oversight, so he can get away with anything, and he's just on the take from everybody.
Yeah, it's like the Empire hasn't been like in power that long, and he's already like fat as hell and running a scam over everybody.
He was probably doing it during the Republic times,
too. Yeah. And yeah, I can imagine that he might have been looking at some jail time, and all of a sudden like all his problems went away when the Republic went away.
Oh, I love this. Like, I love this backstory.
And he's like, well, okay.
He shot his commanding officer to buy himself some time. And then the Republic falls and he's like, oh, thank the maker.
Who's the Empire? Palpatine? Sure, okay, fine, well, yeah, whatever.
Yes, but is it the same Palpatine?
I get to stay here, right?
They get a new uniform? Cool.
Yeah.
They're so overwhelmed with the reorganization, they can't tell what's going on, right? God, yeah, this guy's like a perfect villain, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, elsewhere, they flash to the crash site, and then some troopers are going to they're going in closer to investigate it.
I know this is just like a flash away where we're spending a lot of time playing cards in this bar, but I think this is to show that they're doing a patrol, and they see the crashed ship and they go down to investigate because it looks like one of their shuttles is like shows that they are not incompetent. Like just in general, they're not incompetent. And they are monitoring the space, and they're going to check things out that don't make sense to them, and this is one of them. I know it's just a plot point, but I love what it implies, that there's like a machine that's being spun up that does this sort of work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then back at the bar, it's clear that Man is also losing to Omega. Man complains about Batcher. The Hound and insists that she leaves the area. Batcher is put outside. Man says he hasn't seen her or her dad before, her dad being Crosshair. Omega says they're just passing through. Man looks like he's about to win a hand, but Omega wins instead. She's got like some cool like Uno, you know, like draw four sort of cards. Super like, colorful compared to like the other cards that they're using.
Yeah, it's a royal flush version of her hand, right, or whatever. Mm-hmm. I like the Uno thing though, because they do sort of look like Uno cards.
Yeah, so she wins the 20 grand in credit that they had wagered. Man says that she won fair and square and congratulates them. A stormtrooper tells Man that there's a crash shuttle on the outskirts of town. Man says he is aware of any ship coming in today. He then turns back to Omega and says that she owes him a fine for gambling. She has to pay Man 10,000 credits, and Man takes the money and thanks her.
Perfect, you know, it's, perfect moment.
Yeah, shakedown.
But it's all, it also shows like you were breaking the law. You were gambling with me. We were gambling. You broke the law, so you have to pay a fine. It's a perfect moment.
Yeah.
Laws for thee, none for me.
Mm-hmm. So Omega tells Crosshair that they have 35,000 credits now, enough for the tickets plus some walking around money. So they go outside and Batcher is gone. A street urchin tells them that he will tell them where the dog is if they pay him 10 grand. Crosshair intimidates the kid and he lowers the price to 5,000. Omega pays him and the kid tells him that the Imperials stole their hound and took him to the cargo area.
This is also another perfect moment in this episode where they just got shook down by Man. They step outside and the street rat is like, give me $10,000 and I'll tell you what you need to know. And Crosshair's like, I am sick of this. And he takes like two steps toward the kid and the kid's like, all right, 5,000.
So at the cargo, Omega goes to rescue Batcher. Crosshair definitely objects. He thinks that they should just cut and run. Omega gives Crosshair the credits and says she's going to rescue Batcher. And if Crosshair wants to run, he can run without them. And she runs off. So at the cargo area, there's lots of cages with various animals in them. Omega scales the perimeter fence, but Crosshair shows up to help her. He tells her his skills are being wasted with Omega's plans. And Crosshair and Omega sneak into the Imperial cargo area. Omega sees Batcher in a crate and with all the other crates in the area. And some are big, some are small. Omega asks Crosshair if they should free all the animals. Crosshair says not to push it. But
it's a perfect Omega line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Man spots them and says that Lao has a strict pet policy. No license mean a larger fine. Omega asks how much, and Man says, how about all of it? And they won't need credits after Hemlock comes to pick them up. Omega throws the credits to Man and tells Crosshair, fine. Let's try it your way. So she's letting Crosshair off the chain. So Crosshair opens fire, hits a few stormtroopers before they return fire. And Omega opens up all the cages in the area, and it's chaos. And Man is eventually knocked down. Crosshair tells Omega that he will handle this. She should power up the cargo ship and get Batcher out of there. Man radios that they're stealing the cargo ship. Crosshair shoots the latch on a crate, and a Rathar reaches out and grabs Man. Are we certain it was a Rathar?
Yeah, they've confirmed it's a Rathar.
Okay, awesome. So Crosshair runs to board the cargo ship, and Omega takes off. They escape the atmosphere and jump into hyperspace.
Let's pause here for a second. When they showed up to the cargo area and you saw the crates of animals, I assumed that this was going to happen. That they were going to open up all the crates and it was just going to be pure chaos.
Yeah.
But I think visually it works very well because this is the exact kind of chaos that they sort of thrive in.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I guess, like Chekhov's animal cages. Like in a show like Star Wars, or like in a Star Wars show or show like this, they're not going to show you all these animals being caged up and not release them all, or at least a good portion of them, and they're not going to run amok.
I like Chekhov's animal cages. It's just so, but it's very satisfying. And do you want to talk about the animals now, or do you want to do it during trivia?
Oh, we could do it during trivia.
Okay.
Because I actually wanted to talk about like the transport that they steal. From the back of it, it looks like, I can't think of the name of the ship, but Iden Versio's ship. It's very much got a similar design.
I don't know that ship very well. I remember I'm looking it up in Wikipedia. I don't think the ship is named. It is, because I was looking up the ship names for something else. Yeah, it's just called the Lao cargo ship, and there's not even a page for it in Wikipedia yet. But when I click on
the... Oh, it's the Corvus.
Oh, the Corvus. Oh, that was the ship you're talking about.
Yeah.
Right. So the ship early in the game. Or is that, that's her Imperial ship, right?
Yeah. That's the ship they're in for that, for pretty much all the game.
Right. Yeah. So I'd have to look at the Corvus and the Lao cargo ship, to see what it is, but it does not have a Wikipedia page yet.
But sounds like a job for a busybody with a lot of extra time on their hands and only a few inaccuracies to put in there just to see if anybody's paying attention.
Yeah, I'll work on it. I can't believe it's not in here yet. All right. I'll decide tomorrow if I'm going
to
do it.
At the Crass shuttle sites, Hemlock is talking to a commando trooper. The commando said that they've got a positive ID on Omega and Crosshair, and they escaped in an Imperial cargo ship. Hemlock says to track the ship and find them. On the cargo ship, Crosshair says that they can be tracked. Omega says that she sent a coded message to Wrecker and Hunter to meet at a secret location. Crosshair says that it's been months, but they can't be sure, and that Wrecker and Hunter are still alive. Omega says that they will be there.
I'm curious about this line. So what do you think about this line from Crosshair that you can't be sure since it's been months?
That, yeah, I don't know. Is it just that, like, he's ambivalent, or that, like, he's seen tons of clones just get chewed up by the Empire?
So my thinking is he doesn't want to meet up with them because he doesn't want to reckon with what's happened between them.
Mm.
That he's coming around to their way of thinking now. And the last opportunity he had to reunite with them, it went very badly for everybody. And so I assume that he thinks that he's in for a very bad conversation.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's possible. Omega lands the cargo ship on one of the moons of Ryloth next to the Marauder. Omega exits the ship and sees Wrecker. She runs up to him. This is a very emotional, like the room gets kind of dusty when in this scene. I'll admit, like when at the end of Marley and Me, where it's just like, my allergies.
Yeah, this is a pretty powerful reunion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she sees Wrecker. She runs up to him. Hunter exits the ship too. Wrecker says that they crossed that galaxy four times looking for her. Hunter says that it was five, but Omega is the one that found them. Hunter says they never stopped searching. Hunter asks how she escaped. Omega says that she had help. Hunter and Wrecker turn to see Crosshair exiting the ship. Hunter and Wrecker stare at Crosshair with their fists clenched. The end.
So we can get to if we liked it in a second, but this ending is a point of contention. So I wanted your interpretation of what Hunter and Wrecker are doing at the very end of this episode. If they're, I wrote the notes, right? So I put that their fists are clenched, implying that they're mad. So what was your interpretation of Hunter and Wrecker seeing Crosshair?
Well, at first I thought that they would be like, oh, great, he's back, because he did try to warn them. They might be, I think they're pissed because of this, if he had been there, maybe Tech would still be alive. Maybe they think that this is just, that he's just fucking with them. Like, and, bringing Omega is just, this is some sort of ploy by the Empire that he's not really changed. Because they're just not, I guess they don't really, my guess is they just don't know what to make of him.
Yeah, so you're aligned with my thinking, it sounds like, that they're not happy to see him.
Yeah, he's kind of the prodigal brother, but he's not one that they're happy to come back. He kind of screwed them when they needed him the most.
Yeah, so that's my interpretation as well. People have been arguing online So there's people have been saying it's not clear if they're mad or not. I think it's clear. And people who don't want them to be mad are saying that Hunter and Wrecker shouldn't be mad at Crosshair. They should be happy that he helped Omega escape. But I think people can feel more than one thing at once, right?
Yeah.
They're reeling from the death of their friend and the six-month journey they've been on to rescue Omega, and Omega rescued herself, right? So that's reason for celebration. But they're allowed to be mad. They're allowed to feel betrayed and have all the hurt that comes with everything Crosshair's done.
Yeah.
Including reject them, put them in danger, set up an ambush for them, all of that stuff. Like,
yeah,
and should work it through, but it should happen.
Well, think about it. Like, they've got this. Think about it like an occasion in your life where it's like a joyous occasion. You're just like, oh my god, say like a family member comes for like a surprise visit or something, and you're like, oh my god, I can't believe this is so great. And then like, oh, by the way, here's my this person came along with me, and it's like their super annoying friend that you hate. So it's like you're super excited, and then you're just like, it's like an immediate like letdown.
Yeah, can I stay here? Can my crack addicted cousin also stay here?
Yeah, because it's just like the moment is ruined by like, oh great.
Yeah, so I think it's pretty clear they're angry, and I really hope that this conversation happens on screen. They need to work it out. I'm fine, like I'm coming around on Crosshair. I really am. Like, I think the Mayday episode did a great service to Crosshair's character. He is no longer this like monolithic, like prejudicial thinking, like I'm this one thing and that's all I am sort of character. I think you described him as overpowered in an episode of our review, saying that, yeah, he never misses. He's just overpowered. That's boring. It can be. And it was getting a little boring. And then they made him like a fascist. And now he's like coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, the only thing I respect is authority. I'm just going to do what I'm told forever. That's not interesting. That's the clone. That's the battle droid thing, where they just follow orders. You are better than that. You can make choices.
Yeah.
All right. We've sort of talked about the ending a lot, and we haven't gotten to it. So I'm just going to ask you, did you like it?
Oh, yeah. It was great. I thought it was a great episode overall. It really kicks you in the feels at the very end. And I'm looking forward to the next episode to see how like what happens with them welcoming. Are they going to welcome him back? What about like Rex and Echo? How do they feel? So
let's get the book band back together.
Yeah.
Sorry. What else were you going to say?
One thing I'm curious on, and this is something I didn't mention last time, is that like the stormtroopers and a lot of the or let's just go with the stormtroopers. The stormtroopers look at Crosshair like he's just a piece of junk, and like he's got like no rights. That he's because he's a clone, he's just a piece of shit. But they're all taking orders from these clone commandos. So
that's a good point.
Like, what's the deal with the clone commandos? Are they like the Sunder commando? Like they're just the ones that they're gonna get chewed up and spit out last. So they just keep doing they're participating in this horrible atrocity against the clones, and promise that they don't have that they'll be the last ones. Their work will set them free.
Yeah,
go even more morbid.
Yeah, I've been having similar thoughts about it. Like, not comparing their arc to Crosshair's arc necessarily, but just noticing that they're the preferred soldier. Maybe because the Stormtrooper program just sucks, and they're still loyal, or their chips have been tuned to something else. But it just seems, you're correct in your observation, that these people just seem to be the preferred security force for Hemlock. And who knows why? Maybe we'll get that answer too. But I don't hate seeing them. I really like the design of them. They remind me of, is it Halo?
Yeah, I don't know what they remind you of.
But they look their screens look like the helmets from Halo, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
I'm gonna drop in that thing from The Simpsons where he says, "Did you hear something?" No. Did I? I don't know.
No. I don't know.
Hey. Did you hear something?
No.
Did I?
I don't know.
All right. Yeah, I'm in line with you. This was a great episode. 4 out of 4 so far this season. I love the escape. I love the Captain Man. I think he's such a perfect corrupt official villain. I love the Stampede. And I love that Crosshair finally, like Omega says to Crosshair, like, "All right, let's do it your way." And he says, "Finally." Because I think as like a parent, you've been in that moment, right? Where you're like, "Oh, finally, I can just finally finish."
Yeah.
You don't have to entertain this anymore. Let's just fucking finish. Get to the end, please. But great episode. Anything you want to talk about the plot before we move on to trivia and production?
No. I think I'm good in that department.
All right, just have a couple of trivia things here. When they're coming into town, the shuttle that Crosshair refers to when they're saying they should get out of town is a shuttle called Star Commuter 2000, and it is first seen in a Rebels episode season 1, Droids in Distress. And in Droids in Distress, the captain of that shuttle is the robot Rex from Star Tours. The shuttle design is reused, and it is the shuttle that Poe Dameron uses to deliver Kaz Ziona to the Colossus in episode 2, I think, of Resistance. So it is a popular shuttle type for Star Wars animation.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to the card game. So I mentioned it, that this card game is called Balaans, B-A-L-A-A-N-S. And it is a deck that consists of 5 red and 5 blue numbered cards, as well as face cards labeled Destroy, Deflect, Bluff, Steal, Block. This is the first appearance of the game in Star Wars, but because it's Star Wars, they wrote a complete rule set for the game. And they playtested it, the production staff playtested the game before the episode was written. So I'm sure we can buy this soon.
Yeah.
Disney. And I'll buy it. I've got a Sabacc deck that I think is just cool to play with. But in fact, the production staff loved this game so much that they shot the whole game between Man and Omega, and it was minutes longer. But they edited it down for pacing and length. So one day we will have the extended version of this episode with several minutes more of Omega beating Man at cards. So there's that.
That's cool.
Yeah. But it means, since they have a rule set and they play tested it, it means that they will, that game is probably technically correct. Like, you could probably follow along with what is happening if you had more details, because it feels a little Deus Ex Machina the way they did it, because he's like, "Oh, he's going to win." Nope, she wins, because she's got the 3 stars or whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
But if they filmed the whole thing, they probably made it technically accurate. All right, so move on to the stampede scene. There are 3 distinct animals seen stampeding. One are Nunas, which we see, like, they're called swamp turkeys from Naboo. We see them everywhere in Star Wars. They look like little chickens. Void Striders from Abathar. And did you recognize these?
No.
These were the... Do you remember the episode for D-Squad with the little frog guy, Gaston?
Yeah.
Yeah, so when they're on, when they crash on the planet, like the white sandy planet, they find themselves in a stampede of animals, and they ride the animals to a city, like a spaceport, and that's where they find Gregor. Or is that Gregor? I think it's Gregor.
Yeah, it's Gregor.
Yeah, that's where they find Gregor. Those animals that they ride to get out of the desert are Void Striders.
Okay. Do you think Gregor is one of the commandos?
He could be. He was a commando.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to figure... He needs to defect, right?
Yeah, because he and Wolf have to end up... He, Wolf, and Rex have to end up on a ATTE, like fishing for Jupers.
Yeah, Tremors. Yeah, although we don't know if they defect or not, right? Because they do contact... I think Wolf contacts the Empire at some point. But yeah, they have to... That's a good question. Is Gregor one of those commandos? I had not thought of that. All right, but in the Stampede, back to Stampede trivia, the last animal that's seen in there is a colorful parrot-like bird that is native to Lao, the planet they're on. And good news, it is unnamed in Wikipedia. I've got a lot of Wikipedia work to do.
Yeah.
I should reload the page and make sure it hasn't been named, but I don't think it has. Man, there's a lot of new stuff. What's a cachou? Oh, that's a drink. That also has not been described. Lots of stuff I can do in Wikipedia. I can really vandalize Wikipedia this week if I feel like it. Also in the stampeding scene, this needs to be added to the Wikipedia entry, I found a interview with one of the sound designers that said that they inserted porg noises into the stampede, so there's porgs in there too. All right, last piece of trivia is the meeting place at the end of the episode is the same location that Omega meets Hera. Did you recognize it?
No.
Do you remember the episode where Omega and Hera become best friends?
No.
The Bad Batch are delivering weapons to Cham, and they land on that moon. It's the exact same location.
Oh, okay. Shoot. Yeah.
It's a gorgeous set, and it's recognizable, and I was very happy to see it again. But, yeah, it's a nice callback to that, a very subtle callback to that episode. Easy to miss.
Cool. Yeah, I completely forgotten about that episode, to be honest.
No, it's a good episode, and it's easy. Like I said, it's an easy reference to miss. I don't have any other trivia or production notes for this one. Do you have any comments on the trivia items or questions about production?
No, I'm good. Once we stop talking about Rancho Obi-Wan, I'm just surprised how quickly we got through everything.
Yeah, it was a short one this week. Do you want to move on to the rating?
Yeah. Yeah, so now's the time in the show where we rank episodes. How we at Yubcast rank episodes is by a Star Wars character. So a really great episode would be an original trilogy character, Han, Luke, Leia, Vader, Chewie, etc. And then go on down the line to where a really bad episode would be just a character that's just completely worthless. If they stopped being in Star Wars, you wouldn't even... You'd be like, oh yeah, that character. Okay, and then just go about your day. So, Matt, what do you rank this episode?
I had one picked out, but I'm going to switch to Gregor. Because
Gregor.
I think I love Gregor as a character. I want to know how his story finishes, and I think this is a great continuation of this plot.
Right on, Gregor. Okay, cool. Man, because I was thinking something along the line of Gregor, but then it's like, no. And then you stole Gregor, so now it's like, well.
Sorry.
I like the episode, but it's not like one of those that are just like, not like Twilight of the Apprentice, where it's just like, that is just like, oh, kind of like super awesome episodes.
Right. This this is from a plot point of view, it's a pretty critical episode, but it's not an episode you would watch necessarily over and over again by itself, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with an Uncle Owen.
Nice.
Just the look on Luke's face when he comes home. I'm just trying to think of like super like emotional like points like in Star Wars that are kind of like a kick in the gut, and that's one of them. Even though you don't know it that well, but you don't know the characters that well, but having seen Star Wars so many times, like you put yourself in like Luke Skywalker's shoes, and you just like his beloved aunt and uncle are killed, and so it's just like it's very emotional. So I said like the end of this was very emotional. Them finally finding each other. So cool. All right. So are you gonna roll? Or no, never mind. We don't do that because of the Bad Batch. We get a stay of execution.
Yeah, we're just gonna keep plugging away at Bad Batch until we're done with it, so we can stay as current as possible. We're already sort of a week and a half behind. Releases, like I said, episode 5 comes out now. I think in about 5 hours. So when we meet again, probably in like 4 or 5 days, we'll review that episode next.
Right.
So our next episode will be, just looking it up, season 3, episode 5, The Return.
Yeah. And all right, I forgot to say it before, but thank you for listening to us. We appreciate all the Yub subscribers out there. Be sure to tell a friend if you liked what you hear. Shout out to us on the socials. And like, if you think we really suck, find somebody you don't like and tell them about this podcast, because hey, screw them, right?
Thank you for downloading and listening to this episode. We would also like to thank Jordan White for the use of his cover of Yub Nub as our intro and outro music. Please refer to the show notes for photos, clips, and links from this episode. Side effects from listening to Yubcast may include dizziness, dry mouth, a sense of confusion, and decreased sex drive. Serious side effects may include speaking in Ewok, speculating the origins of prequel characters, and wondering why 2 grown men discuss children's cartoons on the internet. For a complete list of side effects or to complain about the show, please visit us on Twitter at YubCast or drop us an email at NoochVaderProductions@gmail.com. Thanks again. We will see you again next week with a new episode. YubCast is not affiliated with Lucasfilm or the Walt Disney Company. Star Wars, its characters, and creations are the property of Lucasfilm and its parent company, the Walt Disney Company. YubCast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. Da 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 da